We're going to cover a very important subject today, one that is familiar with all of us, and that is God's instructions that we remember the Sabbath. I think it's time that we all sit back a little bit and analyze our observance of the Sabbath day and the holy days of God. God says, remember the Sabbath. It's an important word. You might ask yourself, why would God use the term remember the Sabbath day? Obviously, the intent and the meaning is that there is the tendency to forget it. That is something that slides from the consciousness of human beings. And it's very easy for us to become so tied up in our own lives, in our own thinking, in how we behave, what we do, that we are not conscious of the importance of that 24-hour period of time called the Sabbath day, or of the other holy days along with that, which are also Sabbaths. So God tells us to remember the Sabbath because it is the nature of man to forget it. We find a history of ancient Israel of forgetting the Sabbath. It is rare indeed in the history of Israel that the people for any prolonged period of time actually kept the Sabbath. Very few times in the history of Israel did they really observe the holy times of God for any length of time. For a few years, there were times that there was a reformation and a period of revitalization over a short period of time, but it was very prone for Israel to forget and turn away from God, and they went far behind. So today I want to bring back to our remembrance nothing new, but some of the important ingredients about the Sabbath. Just kind of a jogging of our minds, of our memories, and our remembrance. Let us review what God says about His days, about His times that He has made for all of us. Not our days, they are not for us. They are God's holy time. Which ought to make us, number one, careful. When something is owned by somebody else, it should make us very cautious and careful about how we deal with it or treat it or how we handle things. I mean, even if we borrow something from somebody else, God gives us special instructions about treating it with proper care. And when you return it, you are to return it in as good a shape, if not better, than the way you borrowed it. Well, this is God's time, and therefore we ought to handle it in our lives as if it belongs to God. It's not ours. So the big first question we need to ask ourselves is, who made the Sabbath? And whose time is it? Whose time is it? Let's go back to the book of Genesis, in Genesis chapter 2, and picking up where it was actually created and made. In Genesis 2 and verse 1 to 3, God says that following the creation of the earth, says, thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. So everything that existed and was to be made was finished on 6 days. And then God says in verse 2, and on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had made. And he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made. So God ended his work by actually creating a special day, a special day of rest, a special day that he says then in verse 3, that God blessed the seventh day and he sanctified it, because that in it he had rested from all his work which God created and made. So right off the bat, we find several very specific things about the Sabbath day. That it came following the natural creation. And in that sense, it was a day to reflect back on what he had made and what he had done, and to be thankful for all the rest of the creation. So he rested on the seventh day from all his work. But then he says he blessed the seventh day. Now, God blesses something. Nobody else can put a blessing upon it. God put his blessing upon the seventh day. I can't, nor can anybody else, go out and put God's blessing upon any other day of the week. It's an impossibility. If God didn't put a blessing on it, none of us can, right? And it says very specifically that God blessed the seventh day. Now, it wasn't just kind of an overall thing. God gave a specific blessing upon the Sabbath. A blessing that was to be reaped by all who came to understand it. That the Sabbath should have a blessing in our lives. So he blessed the seventh day, and it is the only day that has a special blessing upon it. And we cannot make any other day have that blessing. And then also, fourthly, God sanctified the Sabbath, it says. He sanctified it. To sanctify means it is set apart for a holy purpose, that it is set apart for a special purpose. So keeping the Sabbath is for a special purpose. It is a time of thankfulness and appreciation for what God created. And so God then becomes real through the things he has made. One of the ways, and I'll get more to this in a minute, that we can make the Sabbath special is to understand creation better and what he did and what he made. Let's turn back to the book of Romans. Paul explains this in the book of Romans as he was speaking to the people in Rome in chapter 1 of Romans, in verse 19. Picking up in verse 19, he says, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has showed it to them. And verse 20, for the invisible things of him, that is of God, from the creation of the world are clearly seen, and they are understood by the things that are made. Even his eternal power, and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. That if people truly look at creation, and you know the people who should have the least or do have the least excuse for not believing in God are the scientists who should know the most about him. You know that? And yet they are the ones who try to say there is no God and do away with him. God says that by looking at what he made, the pattern of things that are in creation, all of his Godhead and all of his power and his eternity are exemplified, and so they are without excuse, because that when they knew God, so there was a time when they should have known God, they glorified him not as God and neither were thankful, But they became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. And professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. And not only that, they exchanged the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man, and to birds, and to four-footed beasts, and creeping things. They began to worship, as it says, the creation, verse 24. And so God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lusts of their own hearts, to dishonor their own body between them. And they changed the truth of God into a lie, and they worshiped and served the creature more than the Creator. The Sabbath, if you forget the Sabbath, forgetting God is not far behind. When you forget the Sabbath and reject the God time that God made, rejecting and forgetting God will follow very quickly. If you remember the Sabbath and keep them holy and remember God, God will stay in our minds and in our thoughts and in our way of life. And the more we understand God and His power and His divinity and His oneness, the more meaning this day has. So Paul told the people there that when we do not see God and what he has made, including the Sabbath, then forgetting God and entering into idolatry is imminent. One way or the other, we will be entering into an idolatrous relationship because we are no longer serving God. We are serving other things. Over in Exodus chapter 16, in Exodus, the 16th chapter, before actually the giving of the Ten Commandments, as they were in the wilderness area, we are told and reminded of the purpose of the Sabbath day. In verse 22, he says, in chapter 16, verse 22, I think that's it. Yeah, and it came to pass that on the sixth day they gathered twice as much bread, two omers for one man, and all the rulers of the congregation came and they told Moses. And he said to them, "This is that which the Lord has said. Tomorrow is the rest of the holy Sabbath unto the Lord. Bake that which you will bake today." This was on Friday, preparation day for the Sabbath. "And seethe," or boil, "that you will boil," or seethe, "and that which remains over lay up for you to be kept until the morning." And so they laid it up till the morning, as Moses bade, and it did not stink, and neither was there any worm therein. God performed a special miracle because he had told them not to go out or on the Sabbath, but that they were together only on Friday, twice as much as they did the previous day, and that it would last. And so Moses said, "Eat that today, for today is a Sabbath unto the Lord. Today you shall not find it in the field." God didn't put it out there. It wasn't available on that particular day because they had been told to provide it for that day. And so he says, 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, which is the Sabbath, in it, there shall be none. And then in verse 27, as usual, people don't listen, do we? We don't heed what God says, usually until the penalty starts coming, and then we wish we had of. But he says, "And it came to pass that there went out some of the people on the seventh day for to gather, and they didn't find anything." Now, Moses had already told them in the presence of all the congregation, don't go out today or tomorrow, actually, because there won't be anything. And guess what? There were those who went out. They didn't believe what God said, And so they went out just to gather in. And verse 28 says, "And the Lord said to Moses, how long do you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws? See if that the Lord has given you the Sabbath. Therefore he gives you on the sixth day the bread of 2 days. Abide you every man in his place, and let no man go out of his place on the seventh day." So the people rested on the seventh day. And the house of Israel called that name of that place, or of name of its stuff, manna. Not humanly, we might say, would it have been so much work to just go out and gather a little bit of white stuff on the ground on the Sabbath? Would it have been anything really hard to do? And in our own human reasoning, we might begin to think that, you know, God was being unreasonable. Unreasonable. The problem was that he wanted to differentiate the Sabbath from the other days. And part of observing and keeping the Sabbath is to differentiate it from the other 6 days. And not allow the other 6 days to kind of leak over into the Sabbath. That it kind of just fades in. You know how sometimes things kind of ooze across? God wanted the Sabbath to be special, as a special time. It probably wasn't necessarily because it was so much work to gather it, but God wanted them to realize that he had performed a miracle for them to be able to keep that bread over to the Sabbath and enjoy it. And enjoy it. And in not doing so, they broke the law of God. And God said they were rebelling against what his instructions were. How long will you refuse to keep my commandments? Now, I'm not going to give a lot of do's and don'ts about the Sabbath today. Part of keeping the Sabbath, and I'll get more to that a little while later, actually is an individual thing and your own understanding of what God says. No two people probably are going to be doing everything just alike. But the big important thing is, are we striving to obey God and keep his word? And do we recognize the solemnity and the holiness and the hallowedness of the Sabbath time? That time that God has put his presence in. And not allow it to become just another day. Just another day in the week. That kind of no separation or nothing there. I believe that in our lives, there needs to be this differentiation. And that's why there is a defining time it starts, and there is a defining time that it ends. Sunset, right? On both ends. And I think we should recognize that the Sabbath begins and the Sabbath ends. It's a special time between those two things. A holy time between those two times. Now, I'm not going to get down to the nitty-gritty about, well, when is sunset? Let me just say that the time written in your bulletin is not, you know, absolute fact. Do not place your spirituality upon whether or not the sun sets at 7:28 or 7:29 just because we put it in the bulletin. There's a period of time. I don't know how to say this exactly, but that, you know, sunset is not always that easy. In the days when God was writing the word of Exodus, they didn't have all of the calculations that we have of computers and things that figured it out that it was 7:29 p.m. Basically, they were visual, and they saw when the sun set, right? The only thing I would say regarding that is don't look at it one way on Friday night and a different way on Saturday night, okay? Make it uniform that if you know the Sabbath sets at a certain time, you do not say, well, I'll take the latest moment on Friday that I can, and I'll take the earliest time on Sabbath evening that I can to make that period of holiness as short as possible, right? Then we are wrong, and that is breaking God's law. So I think we need to be careful that we are not unaware of when the Sabbath begins and when it ends. Don't allow ourselves to leak over into the Sabbath and think that we are can just finish our jobs and finish our responsibilities. Make the Sabbath so important in our lives that we're not going to allow that to happen. Over in Exodus chapter 20, just over a couple of pages in Exodus 20, in giving of the Ten Commandments in Exodus 20, and beginning in verse 8, it says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all of your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God, and in it you shall not do any work, you nor your son nor your daughter, your manservant, your maidservant, your cattle, nor your stranger that is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth and the sea and all that in them is, and he rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and he hallowed it. This special time. God says to remember it. He also says that we are to labor the other 6 days and that we are to keep the Sabbath day as the Sabbath of the Lord your God, recognizing that God's presence is in it. And then verse 11, we recognize that the Sabbath was blessed and hallowed or made holy by God. By God. In Leviticus 23, I won't be turning there, you can put it in your notes, but in Leviticus 23, 1 through 3, we find that the Sabbath and the holy Sabbaths on the holy days, God says they are my days, my feast days, my days that are important. In verse 3, it says that it is a day of rest, it is a day for a holy convocation, and it is a day where no work is to be done, and it is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. Those four stipulations are made in Leviticus 23, 1 through 3. That is a day of rest. It is a day for a holy convocation. The Sabbath, God says, by his command, is a time for a holy convocation, which is, means a holy coming together, a meeting together. We'll mention that a little later on in another place. No work is to be done. It is God's day, God's time. We'll go on from there, though. We recognize then that God created it, God made it, and God hallowed it, God blessed it. It is God's time. Well, I ask then the question, why is the Sabbath so important? Why is it so important? Let's turn over to Exodus 31 for a moment to pick up part of the reasoning why. Exodus 31 and verse 12, where he says in verse 12, and the Lord said unto Moses, saying, speak you unto the children of Israel, saying, verily my Sabbaths you shall keep. For it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations. In other words, it's a signal. God says it's a sign. It's a token of his presence in our lives. It is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord that does sanctify you as a person, make you holy, make you separated. So this sign, that seventh day, carries with it a big sign or placard that says that those who keep this day are my people, made holy by me, blessed by me. Those who do not keep it do not have that sign, that symbol of God's relationship. Going on down a little bit in verse 14, you shall then keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy to you. And everyone that defiles it shall surely be put to death. Now, we don't carry out the stoning today, but it's still a fact that eventually, in the long run, those who do not keep the Sabbath will be put to death. Sooner or later, in God's judgment and in God's fairness, the Sabbath will be one of the tests as to whether the people were obedient to him and served him and are submissive to him. So God says, you shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy to you, and everyone that defiles it shall surely be put to death. For whoever does any work therein, that soul shall be cut off from among my people. 6 days may work be done, but in the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. And when something is holy to the Lord, then it should be holy to us also. And whoever does any work in the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death. Wherefore, the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath. It's interesting terminology. I didn't look them all up in the Strong's Concordance or anything, but he says we ought to keep the Sabbath. We are to observe the Sabbath throughout your generations as a perpetual covenant. That we keep and observe this seventh day. Verse 17. This is why it's so important. Because it is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and he was refreshed. The Sabbath was given to us by God. That's a sign. And in that keeping of the Sabbath, we should be rested and we should be refreshed. Refreshed by God for what he has done. On over in Exodus 35, again in verse 1 to 3 in Exodus 35, and Moses gathered all the congregation of the children of Israel together, and he said to them, these are the words which the Lord has commanded that you should do them. 6 days shall work be done, but on the seventh day there shall be to you a holy day, a Sabbath of rest to the Lord. See, you do not keep the Sabbath to yourself. You keep the Sabbath to God, to the Lord. Whosoever does work therein shall be put to death. And then he says, you shall not kindle a fire throughout your habitations on the Sabbath day. Now, I know a lot of people have got all bent out of shape, saying, well, you mean they couldn't even have a little fire to warm themselves in that cold desert area out there? Well, when you really understand this, this probably wasn't talking about a little fire, personal fire in their tent. As you read up prior to this, they were preparing for the construction of the tabernacle, and people were doing work on the tabernacle. Bezalel and Aholiab had asked for all of the wise and craftsman in the area to be able to do some of the work. So he probably was referring to more of the working fire that they were going to be used in part of the construction and in the work of developing the tabernacle, not just to warm one's hands on. But here nor there, God says not to kindle a fire on the Sabbath. And when you read what the commentaries say and what seems to be the indication is that it was for work purposes, that they didn't, were not to have the fire going for work purposes. Let's turn over to Ezekiel 20 to find out how important then is the Sabbath in Ezekiel, the 20th chapter. I think God makes it pretty clear in Ezekiel of why and how it's so important and what happens when we become so familiar with it and we allow it to become unimportant in our lives. And so he says in Ezekiel 20, and picking up in verse 12, "Moreover also I gave them my Sabbaths to be a sign between me and them, that they might know that I am the Lord." See, the Sabbath should show us who God is. It should be a revelation of God in our lives. Keeping the Sabbath will make God big in our lives. Forgetting the Sabbath will make God little in our lives. And we become much more preoccupied with what human beings are, what man is, less important of what God is. Keeping the Sabbath points our minds and our thoughts to God. And so he says, "Moreover, I gave them my Sabbaths to be a sign between me and them, that they might know that I am the Lord that sanctifies them. But the house of Israel rebelled against me in the wilderness, and they did not walk in my statutes, and they despised my judgments, which if a man do, he shall even live in them. And my Sabbath they greatly polluted." Now, exactly how they polluted it, you can go back and read some of the history. They began to have all kinds of idolatrous things going on in their lives. I guess the even more important in our lives is how can we pollute the Sabbath? Are we allowing it to be watered down? Are we injecting other things into it to where it becomes polluted? Are we striving to, as much as possible, keep it the way God intended, pure and clean? "And then I said I would pour out my fury upon them in the wilderness to consume them, but I wrought with for my name's sake, that it should not be polluted before the heathen in whose sight I brought them out. Yet also I lifted up my hand unto them in the wilderness, that I would not bring them into the land which I had given them, flowing with milk and honey, which is the glory of all lands. Because they despised my judgments, and they walked not in my statutes, but they polluted my Sabbaths, for their heart went after their idols." Rejecting the Sabbath will result in our hearts going after idols and wanting to forget God. Coming down to verse 19, "And I am the Lord your God, walk in my statutes, keep my judgments and do them, and hallow my Sabbaths. And then they shall be a sign between me and you, that you may know that I am the Lord your God." But it says, "Notwithstanding, the children rebelled against me. They walked not in my statutes, neither did they keep my judgments to do them, which if a man do, he shall even live in them. And they polluted my Sabbaths. Then I said I would pour out my fury upon them." And then coming down to verse 24, he said, "Because they had not executed my judgments, but they have despised my statutes, and they have polluted my Sabbaths." It's interesting terminology that he says, they have not executed my judgments, they have despised my statutes, but they have polluted my Sabbath. And I'm pretty sure God had a reason why he used a certain terminology. It obviously appears that the problem that we have in the Sabbath is that we began to pollute them. We pollute them. And they become watered down, or they become mixed with other things, rather than to remain pure the way God wants them to be. And so he goes on through all of this and shows why they finally were taken into captivity, because they rejected God. I want to go back to the book of Nehemiah. After the exile and going into exile, the children of Israel then had come back in chapter 13. And Nehemiah was talking to God about why he should be remembered, and why he should have a special relationship concerning his relationship with God. And he says in verse 14, he says, "Remember me, O my God, concerning this, and wipe not out my good deeds that I have done for the house of my God and for the offices thereof. And in those days saw I in Judah some treading wine presses on the Sabbath, and bringing in sheaves, and lading or loading asses, as also wine, grapes, figs, and all kinds of other things, which they have brought into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day." They were marketing on the Sabbath. "And I testified against them in that day wherein they sold victuals. There dwelt men of Tyre also therein, which brought fish and all manner of ware, and they sold on the Sabbath unto the children of Judah in Jerusalem. And then I contended with the nobles of Judah and said to them, What evil thing is this that you do, and you profane the Sabbath? Did not your fathers thus, and did not our God bring all this evil upon us and upon this city? Yet you bring more wrath upon Israel by profaning the Sabbath? What are you doing?" And then turning over a few verses later in verse 21. "And then I testified against them, and I said to them, Why lodge you about the wall? If you do so again, I will lay hands on you. From that time forth came they no more on the Sabbath." Put a little bit of strictness into it. "And therefore they kept the Sabbath, and I commanded the Levites that they should cleanse themselves, and that they should come and keep the gates to sanctify the Sabbath day. Remember me, O my God, concerning this also, and spare me according to the greatness of your mercy." In other words, Nehemiah was saying, "Remember me for my understanding of the Sabbath, and in my striving to make them important with the people of God. Remember me for my conscientiousness." Okay, next big question is, what does God expect of us? What does God expect of us on the Sabbath? Over in Psalm chapter 73, the 73rd Psalm, which was a song of Asaph. He was a musician who actually was writing a psalm. And he said regarding the Sabbath, and I'm not going to read all of this, but he said in verse 2 that his feet had well gone, had almost gone, my steps had well nigh slipped. And why had they well nigh slipped? Why was he well on the way to going into sin and disobeying God? He says, verse 3, "Because I was envious of the foolish when I saw the prosperity of the wicked." When I looked around and I saw that those who didn't keep the Sabbath and all of the wicked, and they seemed to have everything going great, they were being prospered. They were making money hand over fist. They lived in fancy houses. And they didn't ever seem to have any trouble. I never forget one time in visiting a person who had made the tragic choice of leaving the Church of God and leaving the body of Christ. And he was explaining what had happened since. And he said to us, things have gone nothing but good for us since we've left. Everything has gone good for us. Is that the criteria as to whether the Sabbath should be kept? Well, coming on down in Psalm 73, Asaph says, coming down to verse 17, that he had this great problem. Until, he says in verse 17, until I went into the sanctuary of God. In other words, when I entered into the Sabbath services of God, into the sanctuary of the house of God, things began to come clear. The meaning of life began to become clear. So I went into the sanctuary of God, then understood I therein. Surely you did set them in slippery places. You cast them down into destruction. You see, they may seem to have everything going for them. But that's not the end of the story, is it? They may even seem to be being blessed. But that's not the end of the story. It says, when we come into the house of God, one of the things God does is he makes clear what the end results are going to be of those who are obedient and what the end results are of those who are disobedient. And there is a big, clear difference between them. When we come to Sabbath services, we should be reminded of the end results of breaking God's ways and his laws. And we should be reminded of the salvation that we have through God of eternal life. So, coming on down then, and turn over to Psalm 95 for a minute. In Psalm 95, what does God expect of us on the Sabbath? Number one, he expects us to enter into his sanctuary, to enter into his presence, and be reminded of what his presence is. Psalm 95, verses 1 to 11, he says, O come and let us sing unto the Lord, and let us make a joyful noise to the rock of our salvation, and let us come before his presence with thanksgiving, and make a joyful noise unto him with praise. One of the first things when we come into the presence of God, he says, that we ought to come into his presence with thanksgiving and appreciation for who he is, what he's done. So much of our conversation should be on thankfulness and appreciation for the truth of God and what he's done in our life. How he has brought about the good things. Coming on down, he says in verse 4, in his hand are the deep places of the earth, and strength of the hills is also his, and the sea and all the rest. And then in verse 6, so let us come, let us worship and bow down, and let us kneel before the Lord our Maker. For he is our God, and we are the people of his pasture, the sheep of his hand. Today, if we will hear his voice, do not harden our hearts as in the provocation and in the day of temptation in the wilderness. Let's not be like ancient Israel in hardening the hearts, but that when we come before God, we worship him, we bow down with awe, we kneel before God as our Maker, and we keep the sign of that relationship, which is the Sabbath, And then he tells us we are his sheep. We are his sheep. And God knows his sheep. And we are told not to have a hard heart. And that we are to enjoy God's rest day. Now, that same psalm is quoted by the Apostle Paul, or the author of the book of Hebrews, over in Hebrews chapter 4. Hebrews, the fourth chapter. And I'm not going to pick all of it up, but he was quoting this condition. And coming down to verse 8, he says, "For if Joshua had given them rest, then they would not have afterwards have spoken of another day. But there remains, therefore, a rest to the people of God." Many other translations will actually render that. "There remains, therefore, a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For he that has entered into his rest, he also has ceased from his own works, as God did from his." You know, when God, after creation for 6 days, he ceased creating and he rested. So what he says is that when we keep the Sabbath, we cease from our own works as God did from his, and we rest on the Sabbath. And then it's interesting terms in verse 11, kind of a twist. He said, "Let us therefore labor to enter into that rest." In other words, we work diligently and hard to rest. On those other days, we work and we labor that we might rest, lest any of us fall after the same example of unbelief. And what I said a while ago was, once you forget the Sabbath, God becomes distant, and he will become unimportant in our lives. And he will become more and more that way a lot the more we reject God in our unbelief. I want to just turn to a few scriptures of what Christ said over in the New Testament about the Sabbath in Mark chapter 2, and make a few comments about a few of them. Mark, the second chapter, and verse 23. He says, "And it came to pass that he went through the cornfield on the Sabbath day." So obviously they were walking near a field, or through a field of one way or the other, that was along beside a pathway or a roadway of some kind. And they were walking on this field. So they were walking. It's not wrong to walk a certain distance on the Sabbath. I don't know how far that is, but it's permissible to do a certain amount, because the disciples and Jesus were walking on the Sabbath. "And as they were walking along, the disciples began as they went to pluck certain ears of corn." Now, this wasn't what we think of corn, you know. This was more like wheat or maize. And it's kind of like wheat. "And as they were walking along, they just pulled a few heads of wheat off of the stalks, and probably like many of us have done who have grown up in farming areas like that, as you pull those wheat off, you rub them in your hands, and you come out with the wheat. And then you throw it in your mouth and you chew it up." So they were pulling off certain ears of the corn, and they were eating this. And then the Pharisees said to them, "Behold, why are you doing what's not lawful on the Sabbath?" Now, the Pharisees were the last people who should try to explain what's lawful and not. In their own misunderstanding of what the Sabbath was. They thought that they were breaking the Sabbath. The first reason they thought they were breaking the Sabbath was because of the law in Deuteronomy chapter 23 and verse 25 that says that you shall keep the Sabbath in plowing time and in earing time, right? In other words, you are not to harvest on the Sabbath. So their interpretation of that was that the disciples were harvesting, therefore it was illegal. Well, it's not real harvesting to pull off a few heads of wheat and rub it in your hands. It's not harvesting the crop. And Christ told them that that's not the way it was. And then it gives the example of David and showbread, but coming on down then to verse 27, and he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man. See, man was created on Friday, the sixth day. The Sabbath was made on the seventh day, after man was created. God says through Christ that the Sabbath was made for man. The reason it was created by God was for man, and not man for the Sabbath. You see, if he had created the Sabbath earlier and then man, maybe he could have said, well, man was created to keep the Sabbath. That's not the way it was. The Sabbath was a gift to human beings. It is a gift, and we ought to think of it as a gift of God for us in our lives. Therefore, the Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath. He is master of it. He made it. He's the one who gave it to us. In Mark chapter 3, going down just a few in the next chapter in Mark 3, verses 1 to 6, he talks about healing on the Sabbath. And he healed this man with a withered hand. And verse 4, they had said, but he said to them, is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath day or do evil, to save life or to kill it? But they held their peace. And when he had looked around about them with anger, being grieved for the hardness of their hearts, he said to them, stretch out forth your hand. And the man stretched it out, and his hand was restored, whole as the other. In other words, Christ made it very clear that it's not wrong to restore. It was not wrong for him to heal on the Sabbath. You can find a couple of other places. I'll just mention them. John 5 and verse 1 to 10 talks about healing on the Sabbath. And in John 7, he talks about making this man whole on the Sabbath, making him well. We'll turn, however, over to Luke chapter 4, Luke the 4th chapter and verse 16. Luke 4 and verse 16. And he came to Nazareth where he had been brought up, and as his custom was, he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day. Christ, as his custom was, entered into the synagogue on the Sabbath, and he read, and he stood up for to read, and they brought him the book or the scroll of Isaiah. So his custom was to go to that convocation on the Sabbath. It should be our custom to go to the convocations that God has on the Sabbath. We find in Acts chapter 13 that Paul taught the Gentiles on the Sabbath day. He taught the Gentiles on the Sabbath. Okay, let's cover one last point. Well, how can we make the Sabbath special? How do we make the Sabbath special? Isaiah 58. We are find amazing amount of information packed into a couple of verses in Isaiah 58. But we don't want to extrapolate too far out in adding to and becoming like the Pharisees, to where we become Pharisaical in things either. Neither do we want to become slack and slothful in our keeping of the Sabbath. So he says in verse 13, if you will turn away your foot from the Sabbath. First thing about making the Sabbath special is that we need to turn our feet away from the Sabbath. We stop treading on holy time. We are aware that it is holy time and that it begins at sunset on Friday evening and it ends on Saturday evening at sunset. That period of time in there is holy, and it was made holy, and we stop treading on it with doing various things, and he lists some of them. So if you will turn away your Sabbath from the holy, or from the your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day. So God says we have to and need to cease from our own pleasures. We have 6 days to do those things. And do, not all pleasure is wrong. Not all pleasure is sin. Make sure it is not the kind of pleasure that is sin, even on the other days. But there are times that we, God says, to enjoy things. But on the other 6 days that he gave to us, the Sabbath is God's time. We ought to think about God and what he's doing. So he says that we are not doing our own pleasures on the Sabbath day. The third thing is that God says that we need to make or call the Sabbath a delight. Now, it's not just, well, I can call it that even though I hate it, you know. It must be that total change in our perspective, our change in our thinking that makes the Sabbath, because of our relationship with God and our desire to worship him, that it makes it a delight. A delight. So we call, or then we make the Sabbath a delight. And that requires a change of heart, a change of mind from the other 6 days of the week. Then in going on in verse 15, honorable. So God says that part of our responsibility is to make the Sabbath honorable, honoring God, honoring the maker of it, recognizing what it is, honorable day. Number five, that we are to honor God, honor him. And how do we honor God and how do we honor Christ? By not doing our own ways. Three very specific things, he says. We do not do our own ways. We do not find our own pleasures. And we do not speak our own words. That kind of covers them a lot, you know. We don't find our own ways or do our own ways. We don't find our own pleasures. And we do not speak our own words. There's a lot that could be said about those. How we keep it, as I said earlier, is going to change. The way I keep the Sabbath today is quite different than what we would have kept it when we were a lot younger. As one grows and matures in understanding, so is also our observation and our keeping of the Sabbath. We must recognize individuality when it comes to the Sabbath. What some people will find permissible, some will not find permissible. I'm not here to say one is right and one is wrong, necessarily. What I might wind up doing or not doing might be different from what some of you would do or not do. But all the while, we ought to be asking ourselves, if God were to reveal that we are wrong about doing this, would we be willing to change it? So we're always maintaining the attitude of willingness to revisit our understanding one way or the other, in both directions. And probably we will find that we need to change more and more toward the more strict keeping than to the more lenient one, because we tend to be pretty lenient in some ways. I know one of the areas that gets mentioned a lot of times is there are those who believe it's permissible to go out to eat on the Sabbath. And there are others who believe it is not right to go out and eat on the Sabbath. I can't go to any one scripture that says one way or the other. I'm not doing any work. Now, some people will argue that, well, in that, when you go to a restaurant, that chef and those waitresses are men servants and maid servants, right? Well, I don't think that fits necessarily. Although after I pay my tip, I'm wondering whether or not they are. At the rate they pay tips nowadays, you think you're paying them. So the point I would like to make here, though, is that we understand there will be differences. It is not my place to convince those who go out on the Sabbath that they shouldn't, nor is it my place to convince those who don't go out to go out, neither way. What I am here is to convince all of us to put question marks in our mind as to whether or not we are doing things because we want to please and obey God. Are we here to change whatever we need to change to worship and praise God? And if that were to, if God shows me, thou shalt not ever go out to a restaurant on the Sabbath, I have to say I would be willing to do it. Now, if he shows me that it is permissible to go out on the Sabbath, am I willing to do that? So there are a lot of things that are, you know, left to us to recognize that how we do things is a representation of our relationship with God. And I think we all ought to respect one another, honor one another, and appreciate one another as we are on this pathway of growing and going to where God wants us to be. God will honor our Sabbath keeping. He will honor our Sabbath keeping if we strive to do it with the attitude he wants to have. And he will put that special blessing upon it. One of the ways we break the Sabbath is in Amos 8, where they couldn't wait for the Sabbath to be over. Okay? In other words, if we sit around all Saturday afternoon watching the sun, or looking at our computer, well, when does it say Sabbath is over? So we can get out of here and go on. Then we're wrong. Not only did you break it, all afternoon you were breaking it while you were looking at the sun. That we ought to enjoy the Sabbath and not as they were. They wanted to get on with business. They wanted to get on with doing whatever they wanted to do. God says that is being hard-hearted. So in conclusion, God's Sabbaths are a special gift to us, given to us as his people, as a sign between him and ourselves, a sign that we are God's children, his sheep. He is leading and he is guiding. So we must remember the Sabbath, remember God's instructions, remember why he made it, and never allow the Sabbath to become routine. Never allow the Sabbath to become just a regular part of our week. And that's easy to do. That we kind of just slide into the Sabbath. Make it a seventh day, 24-hour period that is special. Because God made it special. So let's make it a day that has God's presence in it.